This is a short story from my archives that's called California Screamin', and it's actually about a real character that I had numerous adventures with back in the late 80s and the early 90s when I was a fledgling producer in L.A. His name was Bame. He was tall and blonde and almost good-looking until you saw his eyes. You could tell something had occurred. This was a man gone mad. He lived with a black dog he hated in the woods near Mendocino in a 12-foot Airstream trailer with floor-to-ceiling plastic walls added on. Substandard living with the million-dollar view. Endless acres of green forest framed the rugged California coastline. Blankets of mist appeared and dissolved. The clouds provided his changing abstract art exhibit. Stars lit his night. No electricity, because in order to survive, he had to unplug. He was almost famous once. In the mid-70s, he was a young maverick fresh from the UCLA art department, making avant-garde videos to music. The record companies rejected his work, saying they did not think videos would ever sell records. Angry and hurt, he turned to his anarchist performance art. The surrealistic ballet featured two bulldozers shoving 8-foot translucent balloons with dancers inside around a Safeway parking lot. The Dog Farm sculpture series depicted rows of vegetable garden with puppies sprouting tail first, then being carted away in wheelbarrows. He is the only recorded human to be videotaped while skydiving and singing tenor from Madame Butterfly. I suppose you could say he was eccentric. When I knew him in the late 80s, he was building million-dollar mega mansions for rock stars in Malibu. Big-time sculpture. He drank a fifth of whiskey a day, chain-smoked filterless Camels, and snorted coke whenever he could. Bame lived his life in a drug-inspired creative frenzy, sleeping only 3 hours a night. Every Wednesday, he hosted The Jam, an eclectic evening of drug-induced musical paranoia that attracted movie stars and homeless winos alike to his warehouse hovel in Culver City. The event consisted of amateurs on the guitar, keyboard, and drums, with Bame lead sing screaming such weird tunes as My Brain Is Like a Sieve and White Trash Dumpster Girl. The Jam was a smoke-filled, drug-fest institution, and Bame was the king, until Christmas Eve in 1989. On that night, after three cocktail parties, countless martinis, two lines, and God knows whatever else, Bame drove his camouflage-painted Jaguar over a cliff in Laurel Canyon. One lone tree halted his descent into oblivion, and he awoke covered with blood and his own vomit, a changed man. I met him 2 years before at a party on Halloween, also the eve of daylight savings. The scene, producer's mansion full of nubile would-be actresses with breasts spilling out of their glitter rags, balding older men cheating on their wives, and the normal LA contingent of drug addicts, alcoholics, and egomaniacs. I arrived late with the conga drummer named Fantuzzi, a dreadlock bespangled Puerto Rican who has an uncanny ability to get in anywhere. Not such a bad date for Hollywood, even if he did usually disappear by the end of the night. We were all watching each other play ourselves. The video cameras and lights were on bright and hot, taping for some entertainment show. Bame was leaning against a wall in a wrinkled beige linen suit, bottle of Jack Daniels hanging it from his right hand, sunglasses on, of course. He was fiendishly smoking an almost-gone cigarette. He watched me enter, mysterious in black leather and silver, on the arm of the Rasta drummer. "Dance me," he commanded, and the dance began. I haven't been able to get rid of him since. Later, Gisela, a frizzy-haired nymph from Maui, gave him a tab of acid. She didn't realize that Bame lived on the edge of psychosis already. I abstained, being the hippie type who only took psychedelics half-naked in nature. As the clock struck two, he and I entered our own time between time, the daylight savings hour that belongs nowhere and therefore affords a certain freedom that normal time cannot afford. I got the Bame psychedelic tour of Hollywood en route to Bame World in Culver City, his beat-up Jaguar careening around corners, Bame punctuating our near head-on collisions with cosmic commentary on exploding universes, the harmonic tone that Black emits, and the wonders of a new bacterial strain that lives on toxic waste. And I, captivated by his brilliant insanity, could do nothing but hold on tight and listen. He has always had that effect on me. I sit on the edge of my seat, not wanting to miss the potential moment when he implodes and disappears. The ascension of the unholy madman. He has always wanted to have sex with me. I was fascinated by him, but terrified too, like watching the second hand count down on a time bomb. We got close a few times before I found out about his sexodrama. Apparently, the guy has not had normal sex in years. His turn-on was an elaborately choreographed scene with several girls in costume, dialogue, cocaine, and some specific level of self-degradation that, frankly, I never cared to hear the details of. "It's great," he would chortle. "No contact, and I totally get off." No contact. A couple years later, after he moved to Mendocino, Bame decided he wanted to be cured of his dysfunctional tendencies. I refused to play surrogate. He hated me for a week until I got the following message. "Priestess, I don't know what to say. That is rare. Mind nearing light speeds, waves of nega. How could anyone be mad at you? I am angry, confused, and disappointed, but that is with the weak, neurotic, impotent whiner, not you. You are world-class gorgeous, magna flesh wild, Vanity Fair, chilling. Hopefully you are coming all over the place, and that it is good and it lasts. Eternally, Bame." He always redeems himself somehow. I have forgiven him, but he still owes me $60.